Luke 19. Now, I do want to say something before we do this. I think it very offensive that when Pastor Rich was picking who was going to preach on Zacchaeus, the wee little man, he says it was not personal, but he did pick the shortest person on staff to do it. I thought that was a bit offensive, but I will preach it nonetheless. Zacchaeus, Luke 19. But look at you with the jokes. Okay. He entered Jericho and was passing through, talking about Jesus. And behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus. And he was a chief tax collector and was rich. And he was seeking to see who Jesus was, but on the account of the crowd, he could not, because he was small in stature. So he ran on ahead and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was about to pass that way. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today." So he hurried and came down and received him joyfully. And when they saw it, they all grumbled. "He has gone in to be the guest of a man who is a sinner." And Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, "Behold, Lord, the half of my goods I will give to the poor, and if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I will restore it fourfold." And Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, since he also is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost." This is our word here for tonight. And as I said at the beginning, we are in our series of finding the lost, and today we're talking about Jesus' mission, and it's very interesting. The last verse there that we just read, Jesus says exactly what his mission is. He came to seek and save the lost. And when I read this story, and as I study this story, there's three very intriguing things that come out in this story. And I'll invite you, when I share my three, to throw out any that you might have as well. But the three things that are very intriguing to me about this story, the first one is this, that Zacchaeus is so intrigued by Jesus. We understand the tax collectors were the scorned of society. We understand that Zacchaeus probably didn't have faith to this point. Yet he is intrigued by Jesus so much that he wants to see him. He just has to see who this person is. That he climbs a tree even to see Jesus. And that's intriguing to me. I wonder if Zacchaeus knew about Matthew, the tax collector, being one of Jesus' disciples. I wonder if that was part of what intrigued him, was that he saw Jesus took in a tax collector to be one of his own. The scorned of society is with him. Is that maybe what sparked his intrigue? But nevertheless, this is what's interesting to me tonight, as we talk about finding the lost, is not all the lost are angry or standoffish with Christianity. Sometimes the lost are very intrigued. Sometimes they are very interested in what Christianity has to say. They just haven't been able to interact with it yet. That's one of the things that intrigues me about this story. The second one is this, that immediately upon Jesus showing Zacchaeus attention, Zacchaeus repents of everything. Immediately. He says, "Half of everything I have I'm giving to the poor, and everyone that I've cheated, I am giving them fourfold what I cheated them." Immediately, his interaction with Jesus. Jesus didn't say anything except, "Zacchaeus, I'm staying at your house. Zacchaeus, I'm staying at your house." And Zacchaeus says, "Let me tell you everything wrong I've done and how I'm going to make it right." That's incredible. I mean, he was just waiting to repent, and Jesus gave him the opportunity, and boom, he just lets it all out. And the third thing that intrigues me is this, that Jesus seeks him out. Jesus seeks him out. Because see, tonight when we talk about finding the lost and Jesus' mission, we're gonna split it into two categories here. How a church goes about doing that, being on Jesus' mission, and how we individually go about being on Jesus' mission. But these three points are very important for us to understand tonight. Not all the lost are angry and standoffish to the Christian message, that a very Sometimes the lost can be very open with what it is that separates them from Christ. As we see Zacchaeus, Jesus just talks to him and boom, the conversation's there. He was just waiting to have this relationship with Jesus. And three, that Jesus actually sought them out. Because when we talk about Jesus' mission, very simply we see it as this, to seek and save the lost. That means that Jesus didn't stand in the temple in Jerusalem and say, now let me tell you all these wise things and all you people from all over the world come to me because I'm going to stand right here and talk. Jesus did what? What did he do? He went everywhere. Jesus went into hostile territory. He went into friendly territory. He went to the north. He went to the south. He went to the east, to the west. He went everywhere to seek and save the lost. That's an important message for us today. And before we go on, is there anything in this story that stands out to you? Anything else that intrigues you, stands out to you, that you think is significant as we look at how we're to reach out to the lost? Anybody? Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Okay. The very word lost indicates they're seeking the way. When you're lost, you're seeking to find the way out. Yeah. That's a very important point. Yeah, go ahead. Speak loud.
But not everybody agreed with him. He had opposition.
Jesus, you're talking about Jesus. Yeah, as Jesus says, let me stay with you. Some of the people say, whoa, 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 this guy doesn't belong. What are you doing hanging out with this sinner? Right? Yeah, he gets opposition. Why is that significant? Right? Absolutely. Absolutely. Anybody else? Yeah.
But he also understood that he was doing something wrong because he mentioned that if I can draw anybody over.
Right. Well, and that's a good point. We know that the Bible tells us that the law is written on all of our hearts. And immediately with his interaction with Jesus, he starts telling him everything he's done wrong. And so it's an interesting thing that not always do the lost know what they've done wrong. But in this case, Jesus doesn't even convict him. Jesus doesn't even say, here's what you've done. He says, I know that I've done this. And immediately that law on our heart is there. Yeah, Chris. Yeah.
And responded.
Yeah.
Someone who's willing to climb a tree to see
him. Right. Yeah.
With his Armani suit.
Well, and that's the point, yeah. He's a very wealthy man. The text tells us he's the chief tax collector, a very wealthy man. Jesus is walking. Does Jesus know who he is? Well, he calls him by name. So, yeah, he knows him just a bit. And he's in a tree. And so I think it's interesting when we look at, as we relate this to ourselves, what lost people around us are making a lot of effort to see what's going on that we might be walking right past? Who's up in the tree that's really engaged, really wants to know what's going on, and Jesus stops to make a point of it? Who are we sometimes missing that is making a big effort to try and find out about what we believe or what we teach or what Jesus has to say every day? And it's an intriguing thing. Yeah, Jesus sees the effort and acknowledges it and says, hey, let me go to your house and tell you what this is all about. Anything else? Yeah, Lori. Oh, yeah. Right. 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 And that's going to be one of our points as we go in here to talk about how we live out Jesus' mission. Okay, so let's talk about Jesus' mission. I said we're going to split it into two. We're going to talk about how a church lives out Jesus' mission and then how us as individuals. The first thing I want to say, 4 points that I think express what a church living out Jesus' mission looks like. The first one is this. A church that lives out Jesus' mission is a church that worships. And that's pretty obvious, but it's an important one. Because if the worship is not right, if the worship is not centered in the right place, focused on the right things, then it's going to have ramifications throughout the whole process. If you're not pointed at Jesus, how can you serve Jesus' mission, right? Right? And so very first thing we have to understand is a church that worships, gathers together to hear God's word, God's truth preached in its entirety, that share, you know, we look at Acts chapter 2, and we see them praising God, we see them praying to God, worshiping God, praising God, and praying, we see them sharing things together in fellowship. What else would you say a church that worships looks like? A church that's in true, honest worship of Jesus, what happens in worship? How can you distinguish that? Intercede for others? Absolutely. Anybody else? The truth is preached from the pulpit. And as I said earlier, that it's the church is focused on Jesus. That everything is focused on Jesus. The reason why we're here is Jesus. The one that is preached and praised is Jesus. And the focus is on Jesus, not on us. I think that's an important thing. The second thing that we see from a church that is focused on Jesus' mission, that is living his mission, is a church that witnesses. A church that witnesses. Not only do they worship, but they witness. Sharing the good news of the gospel wherever they go, being bold. And this is the difference between a church that witnesses and a church that doesn't. A church that witnesses is not content to just fellowship with their own believers. A church that witnesses looks around and says, we need some people that don't know Jesus in this church. We need to be inviting some people that aren't a part of us into this church. That welcomes the questions. That welcomes the rawness of unchurched people. A church that witnesses seeks out those people that don't know Jesus and wants them a part of their church. You know, there's times where I've heard people talk about their churches, bragging about their churches, and they say, oh, our church is so well-versed in the Bible. We know everything. We, you know, our Bible studies, we don't even need a pastor because we just have all this great knowledge, and that's a good thing, except you need the counterbalance. If you have all those great teachers, where are the ones that need to be taught? Get them there too. So a church that witnesses seeks those. I read this incredible story. I wanted to share it with you. It was a missionary in India talked about going to these small villages and trying to convert these small villages. And they set up a church, and some of the youth and the men of the town, village, chained up the church and said, do not go and worship. And they said, well, tomorrow is Easter. We're going to worship. And so one of the elders, one of the oldest men in the community, went and broke down the chains, and they began to worship the next day. And the young men came, drug everyone out, said, who broke down the chains? Who did this? And the old man raised his hand and said, I did this. We're going to worship our God. And they beat him to death right in front of everybody. And they said, and they changed their church back up, and they said, now don't you worship again. And the man's wife walked up, kneeled next to her husband, who is deceased now, and says, well, then you better beat me too, because I'm going to tear down those chains as soon as you leave. We're going to worship our God. And all of a sudden, one by one, the church started walking up and kneeling down with him and saying, you better beat me too. And you know what happened? They converted all those men. They converted all those men. Because those men said, well, this must be something different. They're telling us to just go ahead and kill them now because they're not going to stop. And these, it was an incredible story that I read, and he talked about his process of evangelizing in that area. But that's a church that's witnessing. That's a church that is out there. And obviously an extreme story of that. But that's a church where they are out for the lost and they are seeking the lost. The third thing that I think we see in a church that is serving in Jesus' mission is a church that is alive. A church that is alive. And that means that we are living out the gospel, that we are fighting injustice, that we are clothing the naked, we are feeding the hungry, we are searching for the lost, we are giving to the poor. You know, in Antioch, that's the first place that we see them called Christians. That's what they were talking about. What Antioch was filled with was people living out the gospel. It was tangible. People said, look, I can see what Jesus is all about by the way you live your lives. And a church that is alive is a community that is reflecting Jesus. What are some other signs of a church that is alive? There's plenty of them, but A church that has children, yeah. All generations are represented. We see the next generation coming through. And that children are a priority. Yeah. What else?
Where the people obviously love each other.
Where people love each other. Absolutely. Absolutely. What else do we see of a church that's alive, that's living out the gospel? The church reaches out to the community, absolutely, that they're doing those things. You know, all the things that Christ says that will be the marks of the church, they're living those out. Anybody else? Okay, yeah, go. Okay, a church that welcomes anyone and everyone. And we're going to talk about the opposite of that in a second. Okay, and then the fourth thing that I think a church that's living out Christ's mission for the church is a sending church, a sending church. Sending out workers into the harvest, reaching out locally and to all the ends of the earth, kind of what Dave was talking about in that video. A church that is training disciples and sending them out, that is sending workers into the harvest. That is the mark of a church that is truly living out Jesus' mission, that is living outside of their own walls and expanding churches, planting churches, doing these things, that is sending out workers into the harvest. These are the four marks that I wrote up that I thought that when you want to see a church that is living out the mission of Jesus, you're going to see these markers. What are some other things that would be markers of a church that is living out Jesus' mission? It's growing. Okay, and I want to talk about this one for a second. It's growing. Because some people sit there and say, well, you shouldn't measure numbers. Those things don't matter. If you're focused on numbers and on growing, then you're focused on the wrong things. Why is it important that a church grow? Because numbers represent people. Absolutely. It means you're bringing people in. So numbers should be getting larger because that shows that people are coming to Christ. And that's the important thing that the church is about. So numbers are important. A church should be growing if it's alive and serving in Jesus' mission. Now, does that mean that a church that is declining is not serving Jesus' mission? No. There are multiple variables, and there are certain situations where it can be a time of crisis for a church, and they're going to have to work through some things. But a church that is growing is definitely a sign of a church that is living out Jesus' mission. What else? There was another one. I cut somebody off. Okay, giving away prayer shawls. Yeah, 1,000 prayer shawls as was accomplished. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, as us pastors know, they talk about the 20% rule. 20% of the people are going to do 80% of the work at the church. That's just kind of the natural people dynamics. And what would be a church that's alive is seeing a lot more of that percentage, seeing people living out their spiritual gifts, whatever they may be, and finding ways to let people go in their spiritual gifts and be equipped in that and go and serve in that way. Absolutely. Anybody else? Yeah, go ahead, Pat. Yeah. Yeah. Right. A church that's utilizing all of their skill sets and abilities, that people are recognizing that there are multiple ways that they can serve the Lord and finding ways to do that. Absolutely. Okay, so we've talked about the one side of it, what a church that is serving in Jesus' mission looks like. I want to talk about the opposite of it, what it looks like for an individual that is serving in Jesus' mission. And I think this is a conversation where I kind of want to go not what it looks like, but what I know it isn't. Because I think there are some warning signs that you are not living in Jesus' mission in your own personal life. And they all center around one word for me, comfortable. I think sometimes when we get too comfortable, we begin to back away from the mission that Jesus has called us to. And I was reading a book, and it laid out a whole bunch of things, but one of the things that really hit me was talking about how Christians get comfortable and what some of the warning signs of being a comfortable Christian are. And I picked out a couple of these that I thought were very interesting. The first one is this: a sign that you are comfortable too comfortable and not living in the mission that Jesus is giving you individually, that you are too busy being a referee and not a player in the mission. And what they're describing here is players are too busy to notice what everybody else is doing. When you're playing the game, you don't notice if everybody's onside or offside or if somebody's holding over here. When you're playing the game, you're playing. The referees are the ones standing on the sidelines, and they're the ones throwing the flags saying, foul, you know, penalty over here. She did something in children's ministry that I disagree with, or I didn't like what the preacher said today. That was a foul over there. Or this person didn't use an LCMS-approved book. That is heresy. We do not have that here. The referees are the ones that are not the players. They're not engaged. And when you're too busy being a referee, you're not serving in Jesus' mission because he wants us to be players. He wants us to be players. And Christian on mission do not have enough time for this stuff. How do we get there? How do we become a referee rather than a player? I think it's because we get too comfortable. We get too comfortable and we say, you know what? All of that serving stuff is great. Somebody go do that. I'm going to stay back here. Comfortable. Watch. And when you start watching, you start nitpicking because you're supposed to be engaged in the game. And I think the easiest way to go from refereeing to playing is simply to just get back in the game. Yeah, go ahead.
Too many people say, well, I did that back when.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Right. What she was saying is too many people say, well, I did that in the past or I served in the past, so now I'm just sitting back and I'm watching and it's my turn to just sit and watch. None of our turns are to sit and watch. That's not a job description for anybody in the church. Jesus tells us to go. He doesn't say go for a little while or go for, you know, half your life. He says go. Go, be a part of the mission and go, be a player. And when we're sitting back, too often a sign that you might be comfortable is that you're playing too much referee and not enough player. Second thing that I think we can talk about tonight, your desire and your passion for God has become stagnant. Is a sign that you are not serving Jesus in his mission and that you've gotten too comfortable. We know that the Bible tells us that we should have a thirst for more knowledge of our God, that we should want to grow in relationship with our God, that at no point in our Christian walk do we arrive, do we say, check it off the list, I'm there, that it is a lifelong pursuit. And so some of the things that I would think about, a heart that is passionate about God, a desire for God, what does that look like tangibly? I think it's somebody that God's name rarely ever comes out of your mouth, if you rarely ever think of God in a 24-hour period, if you're, you know, the opposite of that would be someone that's passionate, I would think would be someone that finds ways to interject God's name into almost any conversation that they have. They're sitting there at work thinking, how can I say something about God today? How can I get that in? How can I get the conversation there? So that's somebody that's passionate about God. Because this is what I know to be true. You are going to talk about what you're passionate about. If you know me, I am passionate about a certain college football team. What is it?
Alabama.
No. No. You all hurt my feelings. You know that I'm passionate about Notre Dame. Why? Because I talk about it. You know I'm passionate about that. And so there are going to be people that say, well, you know, I don't talk about God, but there's a lot of reasons and there's a lot of... No. If you're passionate about something, you're going to talk about it. And you're going to find ways to talk about it. What should I say here? There is somebody I know that is passionate about cars. And no matter who we are engaging with, they always find a way to talk about cars. And the thing is especially in my generation, the men are becoming less and less car knowledgeable. We're a little more less manly than you older generation people. I'll say that. We are. We can't fix as much stuff. We don't know about cars. I don't know what a carburetor is. So... But here's the thing. He can find a way to turn every conversation into cars, and not everybody can engage in that conversation. You know, few and fewer people can engage in that conversation. But you know what? Anybody that meets him knows he's passionate about what? Cars. It's just the simple answer. You're going to talk about what you're passionate about. So let me ask you this question. Do people know that you're passionate about God? Would your family say you're passionate about God? Would your friends say you're passionate about God? Would your coworkers say you're passionate about God? Do they even know you're a Christian? Do they even know you're a Christian? Because if you're sitting here today and saying no, that might be something that you take home tonight and think about, okay? Third point of a way that we might see that our life is getting too comfortable with Christianity. Do you attempt to keep God in a box? And what I mean is this. Your relationship with God is like this. God, you stay right there in this box. I'll pull you out when I need something, and then I'll put you back. And while you're in the box, don't mess with anything. Don't do anything crazy. Don't change anything in my life. When I put you in the box, it's hands off. You stay out, and then I'll pull you out when I need you and want you to do something. Now, we laugh, but I would think a lot of us struggle with certain times of our lives where we treat God like that, where we say, now, God, get back in the box. I'll do this. Don't mess with anything. Don't do anything. And the problem is this. God doesn't live in a box. And so if you're going to be trying to put him there, He operates outside the box, and he is a God that we can't understand and we can't control, and that's difficult for us, and that's hard for us to understand, and that's uncomfortable for us, but he cannot be tamed. And a sign of somebody that's keeping God in a box is a person that that talks about God operating in only humanly ways. They take out all of the supernatural of God. They don't talk about miracles or healing or demons or any of that stuff that those fanatics believe. They keep God very simple, very practical, very humanly. And he's only in the church. He's only right here. This is where he is. He's not out there in the world doing things. And the problem is when you have that mindset, you're getting too comfortable. You're not understanding that Jesus has a mission, and you don't control him. We are not in. I said this on Sunday. We are not in. He is not indebted to us. We are indebted to him. And sometimes we get that relationship reversed. The fourth thing that I think is a sign that we're getting comfortable as Christians and we're not serving Jesus and his mission is that we are consistently lowering our moral standards. And I think today that we can see that a lot. We can see our fellow Christians and even ourselves that are consistently lowering our moral standards. When we look at the Israelites, it's interesting. When the Israelites needed God to fight a battle, man, were they religious. Woo, they were worshiping and they were praising and he was giving them victories. And then once they had the victory, then they stepped back and they said, we're comfortable. We're comfortable. And when they were comfortable, then they started dabbling in other things. Then they began to compromise their morals, lower their standards, justify things that God condemned. When they were comfortable, when they didn't need God, then all of a sudden the morality lowered around them. The standards did. And this is the thing we know. A heart that is on mission is dedicated to thinking and acting in ways that reflect God. And so if you find yourself constantly lowering your moral standards and saying, I think God would let that go. I think God would let that go. That might be a sign that you're getting comfortable. Fifth thing, and I only have one more after this. You view Christian living as a list of don'ts. You view Christianity as a list of don'ts. Mark Batterson has this incredible quote. I like this. You can do nothing wrong and still do nothing right. You can do nothing wrong and still do nothing right. And what we talk about here is righteousness by subtraction. People that say, you know what? I'm okay because I don't curse, I don't steal, I don't, and it's righteousness by subtraction. I don't do all these things, so I'm being a good Christian. But the problem is God is a God of don'ts and do's. And when we treat Christian living as just a list of don'ts, we are ignoring all the things that he calls us to do. And the question for us today is, do your hearts grieve as much for failing to live out the do's of your life as they do for failing and doing one of the don'ts of your life? Do you ever sit there and go, you know what, I did this terrible thing, but it grieves me just as much that I didn't do this thing I was supposed to? Because that's a challenge for us. Because I think a lot of us live in this life of here's the don't list, and comfortable Christians don't like the do's. They don't want to talk about the do's. They're comfortable. That gets me out of my comfort zone. I want to sit in my comfort zone. So when you talk about all the do's I have to do, I don't want to do those. I just want to talk about the don'ts that I can control. The last one that I have is this. Number six, every person in your circle looks and acts like you. a sign of a comfortable Christian that's not living it in the mission that God called for them to live, is a person who everyone in your circle looks and acts like you. Incredible quote, remember this, Francis Chan. Okay, here it is. Christians are like manure. Spread them out and they help everything grow. Keep them together and they begin to stink horribly. I love that quote. Here's the quote. Christians are like manure. Spread them out and they'll help everything grow. Keep them together and they begin to stink horribly. It's a great quote, and it's so true. Because we know that when Christians are just piled together, living among themselves, when they're only focused on themselves, sitting in fellowship with each other, and not serving in the mission that they've been called to, they start nitpicking at each other. All kinds of problems happen when a church is inwardly focused instead of outwardly focused, right? We know this to be true. When you are inwardly focused, you are going to have problems. When you're outwardly focused, when you're spread out, when you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, that's where God works. And we tend to do things like this. And this is what I was talking about. When we talk about the Pharisees and Sadducees getting mad at Jesus, saying he was going to go to dinner with Zacchaeus and saying, whoa, that dude's a sinner. What are you doing? You know, I was convicted when I read this because I remember this very clearly. It was a while ago. There was a Wednesday night, and there was a gentleman that came. This was years ago. And he sat down, and I sat down with him to get to know him and talk to him a little bit. And one of the first things he said was, I just got out of prison. And I didn't hear much after that because all of a sudden my alarm bells were going, I need to keep him away from the youth. I need to keep him away from here. I need to keep him away from here. I need to watch him like a hawk at this time. And I did all these things in my mind. And it wasn't until days later where all of a sudden I got convicted about that going, wait a minute. Wait a minute. You yourself did a lot of time in prison. How can you judge him? Y'all just going to let that go? No, but it wasn't until a couple days later that I did get convicted and say, you know what, since when was the sign on the door that said all perfect people welcomed here, everyone that's not, leave? That's not here. And all of a sudden I thought, you know what, a lot of times we are very accommodating to give the grace and the mercy and the forgiveness to the people just like us. To those people that we think are morally acceptable people, we'll give grace to them. But to the people that are have some stories, have some history, have some baggage. Whoa. I don't know that we want them around us. I don't know that grace and mercy, yeah, you go find that somewhere else. I'm not going to extend you that forgiveness and grace and mercy and love and peace. That's not for you. That's for the people like me. That's for the people I'm comfortable with, that I want in my church. I don't want people like that in my church. And I think we have to worry about, are we serving God's mission when everybody looks and acts just like us? Are we really reaching all the lost? Are we really reaching all of the community when everyone looks and acts just like us and fits into our little bubble? And it happens individually. Is everyone in your life just like you? Or are you actually saying, Lord, I am going to step out of my comfort zone and I'm going to try and meet and build relationships with people that are not like me to share Jesus with them? That's a sign. We need to, as a church and individuals, be people that are on Jesus' mission that he invites us to. And it's very simple. Verse 10, seek and save the lost. And the lost are not always going to be perfect and clean and perfect for us to